Hi, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 55. We are recapping Pushing Daisies, episode 7, Smell of Success, and episode 8, Bittersweets. As usual, our contact information via email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And you can also look at this post on hypable.com when the episode goes up. I'm joined today by my fellow Hyperbole copy editors, Karen.
Hello.
And Brandy.
Hi.
Fantastic. So I guess we'll get straight into it, and I'll read out the synopsis of episode 7, Smell of Success. Alone at boarding school, Ned misses his mother and makes his first pie to comfort himself. This explains his future career. Chuck decides to set up beehives and tries to fit into Ned's world by making cupcake pies. She continues to use pies to drug her aunts to make them happy once again. Emerson tries to solve the death of Anita Gray, a woman killed by sniffing books, which that is quite possibly the strangest sentence I've ever read in my life. Emerson theorizes that she was mistakenly killed by someone who wanted to kill her partner, olfactory expert Napoleon Linnaeus. Linnaeus notices that Chuck smells like death. Meanwhile, Olive tries to get Chuck's aunts Lily and Vivian to revive their careers in synchronized swimming, but they're depressed over Chuck's death and refuse. The old partner of Linnaeus, Oscar Vibenius, is jealous over Linnaeus' book and seemingly attempts to kill him. However, Linnaeus is ultimately the culprit, as he thought the attempted murder would attract publicity and increase his book sales. Anita was just a victim in his attempts. Lily and Vivian start to swim once more as Chuck's cup pies are officially on the menu. So, seeing as this is Karen's first episode talking about the show, how about we get some ideas on how she's enjoying Pushing Daisies so far?
Yeah, it's been so long. I mean, episodes 7 and 8, I feel like you guys have been doing this forever, and this is the first time that I'm on, but it's just been super busy, so that's why you guys haven't heard from me yet. But Pushing Daisies, how do I explain how I feel about this show? It's like a train wreck that I can't look away from. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I enjoy it. I don't know if I quite like it or love it yet. I think the premise is really cool. I think the acting is fantastic. The dialogue is some of the best dialogue I've ever seen on television. It's just so good. And I love the way that everybody delivers their lines. But this show is so freaking weird. I don't understand how somebody could come up with this. And like, sometimes it's like, okay, you know, this is kind of cool and whatever. But other times I'm like, really? Like, some guy gets dropped in a vat of like taffy, and this is like, it's just, it's ridiculous. And I don't know if it quite helps or hinders the show.
I love that this show is very much like the Marmite of TV. It was either an instant you love it or you hate it, or you start watching it and you're not really sure how you feel about it. And if you do kind of like it, it takes you a while to warm up to it. I think for me, when I started watching it with my friends when I was back at university, we were all animators, so for us, the very visually driven side of it was what really got us into it and kind of kept us. But then as we kind of went through, it was the characters who kind of kept us and the writing. Like, and visually, this is probably one of the most stunning shows that I've ever watched.
It is. It's a very visually driven show. It's unlike any other show I've watched. And in the very beginning, I was still a bit skeptical on the entire premise and just all of the crazy things that seem to happen to Ned at all times. But it has grown on me. I do find myself zoning out at times while watching the show, but something always ends up drawing me back into it, and then I end up catching myself back up. So I'm liking it so far. Just it took a while, I think.
I think the characters are the thing that really sort of keep you here, because they're mm-hmm. really well done, and I love Ned a lot, and I love Chuck, and I love Olive too, and Emerson, of course. I mean, those are the main guys, but everything that they go through in their sort of arcs and how they grow and learn and trust each other, I think is really, really interesting. And even though the sort of mystery of the week type of thing brings everything together, and sometimes it's really good, and sometimes it's funny, and sometimes it's endearing, I find that I really don't care about that as much as I care about, like, the relationship between Ned and Chuck.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I think it's very, very driven by the relationships. I mean, and not even necessarily Ned and Chuck's relationship. I feel like the further I got into the show, I found myself, like, really invested in, like, Chuck's relationship with her aunt, but mm-hmm. the separation of that as well. So her pushing the relationship through Olive as well and bringing Olive into that. Like, I found that really fascinating. And Ned and Emerson, like, I think they're hilarious together. And then Emerson and Chuck as well. And it's just all of the relationships and how they kind of weave together. I think they've got, like, a really, really good cast here that have a lot of really great chemistry together.
Yeah, it's very well done. I agree. I'm loving the Olive and Chuck relationship at the moment. It's so cute.
So good. So good. And it's funny because I really didn't like Olive for a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you're really meant to. But now that she's sort of forming this friendship with Chuck and she's trying to move on from Ned at least a little bit, I feel like she's kind of becoming her own character. And I really, really love it.
Yeah. I feel the same. I absolutely love them together. But let's actually get a little bit into the episode. I actually added this point in. Did anyone else get a little emotional at young Ned hugging the pie when he's in bed?
Oh.
I don't know. I got, like, super emotional at that part. Like, I'd kind of, like, I rewatched these episodes earlier in the week, and I'd completely forgotten about that part from when I originally watched it, just that one little flashback bit, and just like him hugging it because the smell reminded him of his mom and the warmth of the pie, and I was just like, nope, I'm done.
Look, I want pie so bad.
Oh my gosh, me too.
You guys are talking about how visual this show is. Those pies, like, I don't think they can exist in real life because they are so perfect and, like, colorful and bright and amazing. And I just, like, I need pie so bad right now.
I agree. I saw the kiwis on that one pie, and I just want the key lime pie.
Oh, my God. It was gorgeous.
I know. I agree.
All of the pies are so good. And I'm just like... Yeah, I think you tweeted about it earlier, Karen, and I was just like, oh, pie would be so good. But unfortunately, it's Sunday, and everything in the UK is shut on a Sunday after about 4:30, so there's nowhere for me to get pie. How did we feel about the whole scene with Ned and Chuck on the roof with, like, the flowers and everything? That was this one, wasn't it? No, is that the next one? No, it is this one.
No, it was this one.
Yeah, I'm like thinking, yeah, no, it is. It's definitely this one because she talks about the honey and then making cup pies.
Mm-hmm.
Cup pies. Did anyone ever used to watch the Ace of Cakes show?
No.
The guy from there... They basically make full-size cakes, and they're amazingly detailed and geeky, and they did it for, like, massive shows, and he absolutely hates cupcakes and the idea of cupcakes, and he despises yes. it.
I know what you're talking about. I actually have seen it, and I did know that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So this kind of gave me the feeling of of the Charm City Cakes thing and how he hates cupcakes and is like cup pies. So when we came back to cup pies, I was just like constantly giggling because I kept thinking about that. But yeah, how did you feel about the compromise like that they eventually came to, like at the end?
I think it was gonna happen eventually because Ned's such a pushover. He never stands up for himself ever, so she was gonna end up getting her way anyway. But I think it's a good idea because sometimes those pieces of pies look really big. And I don't even know if I'd be able to eat it. Well, if they were as visually stunning as they are on the show, maybe. But it's a good idea. It's nice to have variety. I like it. But the whole bee scene, I had to turn the volume down because I am terrified of bees and wasps. So I was not for anything involving the bees. I love honey, but I'm just not all for the bees.
I really liked the whole idea of the cup pies. I think one of the best things about Ned and Chuck's relationship is that Chuck pushes him out of his comfort zone. And although he's reluctant at first, when he finally gives in, I don't necessarily think that he's being a pushover. I think he's trying to accept change, which obviously he doesn't like. And he's trying to grow and be somebody better than he is. And I really like that she has that effect on him. And I think as long as it doesn't turn into her sort of walking all over him, I think it's going to be fine. And I do like at the end that he decided to go for the cup pies because they're so adorable and I would totally eat a cup pie.
I think considering portion sizes, a cup pie would probably be about what I would manage because, oh my God, American sized portions of everything are so much bigger than I'm used to. So
yes.
I will order a meal when I'm out there thinking, oh, hey, This is cool, and then get it, and it's like
enough for three people.
Yeah, it's enough for three people. Like I ordered a salad the last day I was in Los Angeles, and I ordered a half size, and it would be the size of what a full salad over here would have been.
Yeah, I can attest to the fact that Danya is really, really tiny, and food is a lot bigger over here, I think, and I can understand why you would have trouble finishing our portions.
I think, yeah, the size of the slices of the pie, not happening, unless anyone wants to share with me, in which case, but then sharing pie, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So yeah, going back to obviously some of the relationships in the show. How are you guys feeling about Olive and her friendship with Lily and Vivian?
I love it. I think it's so interesting how it started off as sort of this way to get back at Chuck, but now she's genuinely invested in them and she really cares about them. And she's kind of taking that and guilting Chuck, which I think actually Chuck kind of needs because she's pushing that boundary a little too far because obviously if her aunts figure out that she's alive, I think that could be really bad for them. And she's taking a lot of risks. And I really love the way that Olive has befriended them and is trying to genuinely help them get over their fears because they have a lot of them. And she really wants what's best for Chuck's aunts.
I love the relationship too. It's evolved so much more than it was in the beginning. Like Karen said, you know, she was trying to get back at Chuck in the beginning, and now she has this love for them, and she wants them to get back to their roots. She wants them to go back to their synchronized swimming, and it's also brought her and Chuck closer, which I'm definitely loving too. So I can't wait to see how it progresses from here.
Did you guys like Olive dressing up in all the little bits and getting really excited when she has the little tail? outfit on.
Yes. Oh my god, she is so adorable. I mean, I've seen her in other things, and so I already know who Kristen Chenoweth is, but like, my god, first of all, she's absolutely stunningly beautiful, but she is just so adorable, and I really, really love her in this role because she's just so freaking cute.
She is. She is really sickeningly adorable, and I love her. I really, really do love her a lot. I mean, obviously, like, coming through these two episodes, you kind of start to see her move on slightly more from Ned because she's spending more of her time with other characters. So I feel like when I originally watched the show, this is when Olive started getting more endeared to me. I felt like, especially as Olive and Chuck's friendship started taking off more, that's when I started to get really invested in Olive. I don't know if you guys agree or not.
Definitely. I think one of the things that really stuck out to me was that Olive and Chuck know sort of not everything about each other, but like they're both aware of the situations that they have and the relationships that they have with Ned. And I think that's really important that Chuck knows that Olive is not over Ned. But at the same time, Olive knows that she can't have him right now. And I think it would have been really frustrating if there was a lot of like going behind each other's backs and not quite communicating that fact. And so the fact that they do talk to each other now and they are becoming friends, I think is really important for them as characters, but also for the show, because it can get really frustrating if it was just like, oh, I'm going to do this week and see if I can steal Ned away, rather than, okay, you know exactly how I feel. I'll try to keep myself in line, but, you know, I still really like Ned.
Me too. The fact that they even communicate about all of this stuff that's kind of, in real life, I would think it was almost taboo to talk about it because it's just completely unreal for two people that are kind of into the same guy to become friends and be communicating as they do. So I like also for the show's purpose that they are communicating about it and progressing from it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel very much the same. That it's not like a... It's not a very traditional love triangle, because if it was, they'd be purposely trying to sabotage each other, but in more obvious and destructive ways. And I think that would take quite a lot from away from the show as well. Like, I think the emphasis on the different kinds of relationships and the different kinds of friendships that can arise from, you know, a situation that is as surreal as this woman is back from the dead and we're harboring her secret, you know. I don't know if it would necessarily fit if it had gone in that direction.
Not for the show. I don't think it would at all.
Yeah. I mean, as for, like, Chuck's plans or Chuck's plan for, like, drugging the pies, how do you guys feel about the fact that she's drugging her aunts to try and help them get over her death?
I mean, on the one side, it's really not the greatest thing to do, and it's kind of shady. But at the same time, it's obvious that they have, like, these major phobias, and they are really very depressed about Chuck's death. So I can understand her wanting them to be happy, and I don't know if there really is a better way to do it. But yeah, I don't know. It kind of makes me feel about it, but
yeah.
What are you going to do?
I know, exactly. This show walks a lot of very, very fine lines between what is okay and what isn't.
Oh, can we talk about that for a second? Because sometimes, and maybe this is just me, I don't know, but it feels like borderline offensive a lot of the times, like between some slightly racist comments or some, like, you know, people with disabilities and things like that. And I realize that it's a comedy, and I realize that it's not to be taken seriously, that these aren't genuine opinions of either the characters or the people making the show. But sometimes I just kind of sit back and go, they really just went there, didn't they?
And they have been doing it. Do you all remember the whole, what was it? The bulimia in the dummies episode?
Yes.
That crossed some serious lines for me. I almost felt uncomfortable during that. But I've noticed since then that there have been a lot of, you know, either crossing of the line or damn near crossing of the line. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very, sometimes it's successful and sometimes it isn't. Like, sometimes I feel like it's very, very well executed in the dark humor kind of way, where it doesn't sometimes make light of an issue, but it presents it in a way that makes us think about it and makes us think critically about it. And sometimes it misses the mark slightly and does become offensive. But I think you get that with a lot of shows, where sometimes the script is executed very, very well within the context of the show, and sometimes they just miss the mark. But yeah, this show, I think, more than anything, especially around the time when it was on, kind of like pushed the boundaries a little bit with it. Like, I sometimes would sit watching it and go, oh, they're pushing it a bit. But yeah, I mean, the drugging thing is probably, I don't know, it sounds terrible, probably not the worst thing that this show has done.
At least it's not ill-intended. I mean, she means well, but I just hope that whatever the stuff that she is drugging them with is homeopathic and, and, you know, it hopefully doesn't ruin their intestines or gives them some kind of gastrointestinal issues. And if it doesn't taste like anything and nothing ends up happening, then no harm done.
Yeah, no harm, no foul.
Sure.
Yeah, let's go with that. But how did you guys feel about the case of the week, which had the most hilarious line in the synopsis of people getting killed by sniffing books? How did you guys feel about the whole case of the week thing for this week?
Oh, it was so weird, and I think I can say that about just about every case of the week for this show. And I think that's sort of where the show loses me, not in the premise and not in the relationships, but in the case of the week, because it's always so strange. But I actually really liked this one, and I think a lot of it came from Lene, the guy who played, well, he ended up being the bad guy. And he just, I don't know, he just played his role really, really well. And it made me laugh. And it was totally ridiculous. But I think this is one of the few times where I can say it actually kind of worked for me.
I agree. It was, I liked how they had, or yeah, the guy who ended up being the killer in the end, how him and it was his childhood friend, or they were schoolmates, how it was both of them, and they were both kind of the opposite sides of the spectrum. One with they just both with their different types of smells. I don't know. How do those two people become best friends? That is the craziest thing to me. But that is this. The case of the week is kind of where the show loses me also. But this one was pretty interesting. And then at the very end, I forget the one that lived in the sewage or in the sewer, how he ended up taking Chuck's sweater. Oh, that's creepy. Not going to be the last we see.
Creepy.
Exactly.
Super creepy. Exactly. So creepy. The things that I really, really liked, I loved the book, just the book itself. You know, when you got that scene where she runs her finger along the thing to scratch it, and you saw all of the little particles kind of moving out.
Oh yeah.
That was so cool. I loved that. I thought that looked really, really cool. But I loved all of the book related humor this week. in this episode, just the pop-up book shop was...
Oh, yeah, the pin-up. The yeah. pin-up book.
I absolutely love that. And just, yeah, the book-related humor, because if you get any nerdy book-related humor, I'm gonna love it. I'm not ashamed to say. But yeah, just Emerson in everything. I love Emerson so much. You will probably see that with all of the favorite scenes that I pick out and favorite lines. It's very Emerson heavy for me this week. Yeah.
It's funny because not that I disliked him in the beginning, but I felt very like impartial to him. And now I'm definitely beginning to like him a lot more. And I think it's just because, he's just comedic gold, and his face and his lines and the way that he delivers them is just, it's amazing.
Every single episode is just on par, like every single time he nails it every single time. And I love him so, so, so much. Just, yeah.
It's his comedic timing. It is perfect. Every single time, and flawless. I end up laughing. His moments are the moments that I literally laugh out loud.
Yeah, definitely. For me as well. I just think he has some of the funniest lines of, like, the entire show sometimes. I think he gets some of the gems from the script for definite. Karen apparently has a very burning question about this episode, though. Do you wanna go ahead, Karen?
Sure. I don't know why this made me laugh so much, but when Lene was going to hide the sock in the drain to back up the sink and everything and, like, leave them that note, which is so strange, by the way, but whatever, did he, like, pull the sock out of his pants?
I think he did.
Gosh, I was dying, and I was like, wait, did I really just see that?
Oh. I'm just thinking of how utterly typical it is that you would bring that up.
What?
I just think sometimes you bring up the strange, like, you pick out sometimes, like, the strangest things from an episode and go, is that a thing that happened? Did they really do that?
Thanks, Danielle.
That's okay. You know I love you. You yes. do know I love you.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, the title card as well. It changed slightly for this episode.
I'm not sure I noticed, but I
didn't thinking, either.
Like,
yeah, but Gabrielle's put it in here, and I'm like, did it?
I don't know. I watched like 6 or 7 episodes today, and I was like doing other things while I was watching it. So
yeah, I just scroll back, and instead of, you know how the daisies were in the field would form the title, mm-hmm. The finger now touches the daisy with the title on it, and then the camera goes underground with the roots, and then it goes created by Brian Fuller.
I actually did notice that, but I don't think I realized that it was new. I thought maybe I just hadn't, like, noticed it before.
I think that's what happened to me, too.
Yeah, and even rewatching, I was like, I think because I've rewatched this show so many times, I was like, when I kind of, I'm terrible, but sometimes I skip the title sequence. I'm sorry, guys. But every, like, watching it, because I tend to binge watch. So I will watch it, like, in a massive run. And what I do is I try and get the episodes to go into each other where it just skips the title card because I try and watch them so much. So I may not have actually watched the title card for this episode. So, I just scrolled back in the video file and, yeah, it changed. But, yeah, so that was, yeah, that was Smell of Success then. How did you, but then kind of going back a little bit, how did you feel about it wrapping up with Lene being the one? Did you see that coming? Did you see it being him, like, blowing things up?
Kind of. When they, as soon as they said his book sales were up, I was like, he's the one that's doing it.
So, me too, exactly.
Yeah, it was like halfway through the episode, I think. So I definitely didn't get that in the beginning at all. But once they said that, I was like, yeah, he's the one doing it to himself.
Here's the thing, though. Do you think necessarily that his book sales would drop even after being outed as the one murdering people? Do you think that this would be a case of any publicity is good publicity?
Probably. I mean, they made a point of saying that Olive was going to cancel her pre-order sales, and I think a lot of people would have said the same thing, but at the same time, it's sort of this, like, notoriety type of thing, so yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up getting at least some book sales. There's a lot of crazy people out there.
Oh, I think, yeah, when it comes to book sales, any publicity is, people are going to run out and get the book just for curiosity's sake.
Cool. How about, I don't know, let's go into favorite scenes. What were your favorite scenes from this episode?
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you might as well go first.
I was
proving a point here.
Yeah, I am, which is why I was like, mine was when Lene smelled the sock, and I know that's really strange, but I just thought it was really funny, but also kind of cool how he used, like, his little superpower to, I mean, it was the sock that he put in there, but we didn't know that at first, and he smelled, like, all these different things from it, and he could pinpoint them to somebody who supposedly would have been the person trying to kill him. And I don't know, it was just like his dialogue and the way that he spoke, he was like super proper and he enunciated everything perfectly, and I think all of that really added to that character. And even though, like, he's super weird and he was the bad guy in the end, I just thought it was just a really good scene.
Brandy?
Mine was, Olive and Chuck in Olive's apartment when Olive was wearing her little 4th of July mermaid outfit. That was adorable. Number one, it was first when she opened the door and she was wearing the outfit. I was unsure how Chuck was going to feel about her kind of being in their, her aunt's memorabilia, but she actually took it fairly well. And then when she started almost crying, and what was it that Olive said? She said, oh, we're not at that stage in our friendship. Exactly. Oh, my God. That was so awesome. That whole scene between them two in her apartment was adorable. And then they asked for pie. I'm like, pie who doesn't want pie when they're crying?
Pie solves everything.
Exactly.
That scene was actually when I finally decided, yes, I love these two characters together as a friendship, because it was just like, you saw, like, Olive really didn't want to give in because it's Chuck, it's who Ned loves, but at the same time, she's like, man, I really understand this woman and, like, what she's going through and stuff, so it was a really beautiful moment.
Mine was Ned and Emerson at the pop-up palace. Just Emerson with his whole I love pop-up books thing, and the bit where he's like right at the end of that scene where he's like, I'm taking this as evidence.
Just like four books.
He took four books. The one like the make your own pop-up book. That was the bit where I was like, yeah. Emerson, I love you. And favorite lines.
Mine was when Chuck said Quasi wanted cup pies, and it was just so funny, but at the same time, like, really heartfelt, and they were speaking in metaphors, and that's one of my favorite things about the show is, like, they do that. They speak in metaphors, and it seems silly on the surface, but deep down, like, it means so much. And I mean, they're not talking about Quasimodo, and they're not really talking about cup pies. They're talking about something way, way deeper than that. And it was just, they do it so, so well. And unlike any any other show that I've ever seen. So that was definitely my favorite line this episode.
I feel like Gabrielle's choice needs to have a mention.
Yes.
This yes. was, she put this in before I got here, and that was the one I was going to choose. But then I picked something else, and it was the follow the yellow thick hose. yeah, I absolutely love that line. It cracks me up every single time when I watch this episode. But the one that I did eventually choose was the little exchange between Emerson and Lene, which was, your book was a bomb. Who are you to criticize my life's work? Your book was a bomb. It exploded.
There's the comedic timing again.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. I just, that whole exchange, even just from like, this is what I meant by the book humor, just the really defensive author kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean my book is a bomb? It's, yeah. That whole thing was just perfect for me. Like, the timing on that was down absolutely to the second. And yeah. Brandy, do you want to go with yours?
Oh, yeah. Mine was when all of, actually, I think this was after the whole apartment scene when they ate their pie and then cut to them being at the pie hole. And they're sitting down watching the news. And Olive says, oh, look, there's the killer. And then he walks in the door and Chuck says, oh, look, there's the killer. Olive grabs a knife and she said, don't make me cut a bitch. Oh, my God. I was dying. It was hilarious.
I think it would have been less funny if it had been anybody but Kristen Chenoweth. Like,
exactly.
Oh, my God. It's just perfect.
Yeah. Did anyone feel at all threatened with her holding the knife, or did they just all go a little bit, aw, you're too cute to be threatened?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
She was a little intimidating. I mean, that was a pretty big knife.
It was a big knife, though.
And I feel like she's a lot tougher than you would think on the surface. I think she would have done some damage.
She would have went down with the fight.
Yeah.
People that are scariest.
Are you trying to say something, Tonya?
I'm not saying anything at all. yeah, so let's move on to the next episode, which was episode 8, Bittersweet. And the synopsis of this episode was, in this episode, Ned and Chuck become official. Olive pines over Ned not noticing that she, in fact, has her own suitor. Ned feels guilty over Chuck's father's death, and a new competitor opens across the street. Emerson is hired to prove a woman's innocence in her boyfriend's death and discovers that a man's fake doll girlfriend technically did it. The pie hole is changed into the pie ho and shut down for health code violations due to the new rivals, Billy and Dilly. Billy is found dead, and Ned is arrested at the scene of the crime, but freed when it's discovered the health inspector did it. Dilly kills the health inspector, the doll's boyfriend is imprisoned, and Ned confesses to the killing of Chuck's father in this murderous episode.
Like, how did they come up with these things? Seriously, do you know what you even just read? Like, the doll's boyfriend is imprisoned. Really? That's a thing that happened? Apparently so, on Pushing Daisies. Also, I vote that we do all the synopses in rhyme next time. Just saying, I think that would be great.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
You to write all the rhymes, because that's a thing I'm doing.
I don't volunteer for that.
So we have a poet in our we'll have to throw that out there. If anyone wants to write us a synopsis in rhyme, feel free. You've got our email address. So.
I think Ariana would do it, because her synopses are usually pretty awesome. I think we could convince her to write it in verse.
Oh, and yeah, let's convince her.
Executive decision. She doesn't know it yet, but she will.
Yeah, I mean, there's, one episode left? for season one, right?
Last
episode, right? So it would be the perfect episode to have a rhyming synopsis for.
Wait, there's really only one episode left?
I'm pretty sure that
season. I think so. Yeah.
I thought it was 11 episodes per season.
Pretty sure season one is 9 episodes. Yeah, 9 episodes.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that it was so close. Now I'm like really sad. I didn't know I'd be sad, but I am sad.
I know, it almost feels like we should have just ended out the season now.
Yeah, and then season...
I have feelings about this for some reason.
Yeah, and season two has 13 episodes, so...
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Because I knew it was 22 total, and I was like, what do you mean it ends next time? So, okay, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But there we go. Yeah, so rhyming synopsis for episode 9. That's a thing that's going to happen. We're going to make it happen. But how would you rank this episode against the others that we've seen this, like, so far? Like, do you think this is a really good preseason finale episode?
I actually really like this episode. Number one, I absolutely love Molly Shannon. She is amazing. I'm a big SNL 90s fan. So anytime I see Molly Shannon, I freak. So once I realized she was in the episode, I was really excited. And I like that Chuck and Ned are now official. And also all the relationships are getting close. Everyone's relationship is getting closer now. And I think you can kind of tell, like, it's nearing towards the end of the season. So this episode was definitely one of my favorites overall, I think.
First of all, thank you for telling me where she was from, because I knew I recognized her, but I couldn't figure it out. So that was really helpful.
IMDb.
While I was watching this episode, like, I opened it in a new window and I was looking at where I knew everybody from. And I hadn't gotten to the more episode specific people, but like the main characters and stuff, I was looking it up. So yeah, this episode I thought was really good too. I liked it because it was a bit more of a serious episode after the previous one. I think, like, you know, Murder by Scratch and Sniff book is slightly less weird than Murder by, like, or slightly more weird, I should say, by Murder by Taffy. I can't believe I just said that, but you know what I mean. And I, yeah, there was some, like, the whole fake doll thing was really weird, and I don't get it, but whatever. I think the end of the episode was the first time that I was, like, actually shocked that he said that, and obviously we'll get to that later, but I think overall it was just a really, really solid episode, and it was a good lead up to what I hope will be a really strong finale for the first season.
Yeah. Did you guys kind of feel for Olive, or did you kind of think that this is what she needed? Like, this was the kind of, almost the closure she needed on it to be able to fully start to get over Ned,
I think a little bit of both. You know, I did feel for her, because it wasn't like she was eavesdropping, but once she heard the boyfriend word, she was like, the look of devastation on her face, I did immediately feel for her. But now she can open up to this other random, hopefully homeopathic drug dealer or whoever this guy is. Hopefully she can open up to him, because he seems like a really nice guy. Then again, this is pushing daisies, and who knows who this guy could end up being. but I hope she can at least move on.
What do you think, Karen?
I'm feeling pretty much the same way, actually. I did feel bad for Olive, and I'm kind of surprised saying that because, like I said in the beginning, I didn't really like her. I didn't like how pushy she was with Ned and kind of overbearing. And now that she's taken a step back and she realizes that Ned doesn't like her like that, even though she still really, really likes him, she's not crazy about it anymore, and she is trying to move on. So I was really happy to see that. And yeah, I think the weird, like, homeopathic drug dealer, I think that's a pretty good way to describe him. And I was, like, really excited when she ran to him and they, like, kissed, but then it wasn't real and I was super sad. And
I know.
I hope it works out for them and that he's not, like, a crazy person killer.
Did you guys totally fall for that? Like,
yeah.
Did you think that it was happening?
It's pushing daisies. Like, it's weird, and things come out of left field sometimes, and you never really know what to expect. And they do things like this on, you know, like this turn where something is, like, not happening, and all of a sudden everything clicks. And so it didn't feel weird that there wasn't, like, a buildup to it. And I think that's why I accepted it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
I think I just wanted it to happen for her so badly, so I was like, yes, it's happening. No, it didn't happen. And then I was bummed out again for her. But at least now she's thinking about it. You know, she wasn't thinking about Ned, so it was already a step forward for her. So that made it nice.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think this is the part where I had more hope for her for getting over Ned. Like, I kind of was still on the fence, on and off, through most of this season, for if she would ever be able to get over him. And this was the episode where I was like, okay, I honestly believe that she can do it. And yeah, that bit, I remember seeing it for the first time and going, oh, actually, I could be really into that. but yeah, so the new competitor in this episode, the owners of Bittersweets, how did you feel about those guys and the fact that it was a sweet shop versus a pie shop rivalry? Do you think it was kind of a very balanced rivalry, or do you think it was like one side looking for more competition in something that there isn't really competition in?
It was so dumb. It made me so angry, actually, because Ned was super laid back about it, and he was like, look, we can be friends. It's not like we're both selling pies. Why can't we just make this work? And then the other lady, like Dilly or whatever her name was, she was like, no, you're going down. And it was like, I understand that she wanted, like, his corner spot and everything, but I felt that the rivalry was really unfounded. And I think that she's just a crazy person, and that's why she did it.
Yeah, it was very random. I agree. I don't know where. Well, okay, first off, how did they not know that there was a sweet shop opening right in front of them? I mean, it's across the street. I don't know. And then this random, or what did he say? Yeah, what did he say? I'm a random guy. I'm just a random guy. He just walks in and starts announcing it. That should be illegal. Or something.
So creepy, too, by the way. Like, way too happy about it.
I know. And then here comes the whole Ned being a pushover thing again. He started frustrating me. I know he was trying to make the peace with it. And I agree, you shouldn't. One's selling pies, one's selling sweets. If anything, they could make a partnership in a way. But once she called the health inspector and all that came about, I'm like, okay, now you start to, you have to bring the guns out. Something's got to happen.
Do you agree with what Olive and Chuck did, though? Like, is that what you mean by bringing the guns out? Or do you think he should have done something else?
No, I think the rats was a little, that was going a bit far. I think that was too obvious, too. I mean, obviously they planted the rat, or like the pie hole planted the rats. They could have done something. you got to do something sneaky, like get in their QuickBooks or Paychex account or something and hit them where it really hurts, money. I feel like that's always what hurts the worst.
Remind me never to piss you off, Brandy.
Yeah. Damn.
Well, wow. I mean, it's practical, I feel. I don't know.
And probably a lot easier to cover up.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
Well, no, neither would I. I would imagine it would be easier to cover up than rats running around a building.
Exactly. For instance. And then she just barged in through the glass. Oh, okay. Yeah. Good job, Olive.
That was so funny, though.
It was.
She's like, there's no alarm. Did you have your credit card? Are you going to break in? No, I'm just going to, like, run through the door.
Chuck was kind of impressed, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was.
Olive is badass. Come on.
She should have brought that big knife with her.
I know.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, definitely. But on the health violations, what did you think about that, like, bringing, like, the health inspector down? Do you think that was a long time coming, really, considering what he was keeping behind that locked door?
I mean, well, the other shop shouldn't have done it. That's a pretty low blow. But at the same time, I think if Ned is going to keep doing what he's doing, he has to be a little bit better about hiding it, because even the fruit aside, which obviously he can remedy that. I mean, when he touches them, they come back to life. So it's totally fine from, like, his point of view. But having the dog back there and everything, I think that's, like, you need to be more careful.
Yeah.
I agree. You took the words right out of my mouth, though. I think the whole health inspector thing was a very low blow. That's just not something you do. I don't know. I was really mad about that, actually. I'm like, really? The health inspector? You couldn't think of something else? But it was smart, and it goes back to, you know, regardless, she covered up her tracks because they got cited, so she did what needed to be done. And how did Olive never go in that back room? She's like, oh, we just don't use that back room. Really? Again?
That doesn't surprise me, actually, because I find her, like, I mean, everyone sort of orders her around, and she just kind of takes it, and I don't think that's, like, them walking over her or anything. I think that she's just sort of that kind of person to respond to that and to be happy just doing things for other people. So if Ned's like, yeah, don't go in this room, I can just see her being like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Actually, random question. Do you think Ned pays Chuck because she's working there? I don't know.
I'm going to go with yes.
I'd hope so.
But then how would you say that she would be able to, like, how would they be able to record that? Like,
exactly.
Wages-wise, because she's not alive. She's dead.
I mean, he could pay her under the table, but then that's depending on how much he's paying her. I don't know. This is probably just going
maybe
way too deep.
Maybe she just gets paid in pies.
She'd probably love that. Or cup pies now.
Yeah.
Paid in cup pies. Cup pies and cat suits.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the whole health violations thing, all I could think of is what would Gordon Ramsay say? If you watch Kitchen Nightmares, like, imagine him going into there and just finding all of the moldy fruit.
Oh my gosh.
Just imagine what Gordon Ramsay's reaction to that would be. Take a second to just imagine that.
There would be a lot of bleeps.
There would be a lot of bleeps. Oh. But it would be beautiful. It would be so beautiful. But other retaliations that they did, how much did you laugh at Pie Ho?
That was awesome.
I think what I hoped a little bit more from this episode is that we would have gotten, like, smaller funnier pranks than, like, the bigger, harder-hitting, potentially business-ruining ones. Like, I kind of liked the subtle pie-ho thing, and I thought, oh, they'll kind of go with that sort of thing and build it up slowly. But then they went, no, they went straight in with the health inspector bit, which I guess they needed to get to the health inspector to really push the plot in this one. But I was really, I remember the first time I watched this, really, really hoping for some kind of prank war. I don't know if either of you kind of agree or disagree or have any other ideas on how the episode could have gone.
I loved the pie ho. Well, and also after Chuck and Olive, after they did the B&E at the Bittersweet place, didn't they walk out and saying something about where the pie hoes are, like some kind of cheer, like, oh, don't mess with the pie hoes or something?
Yes.
That was so funny. But a nice little, like, back and forth banter with pranks. Yeah, that I agree. That would have been fun. But they did have to get to the plot, I guess, and blah, blah.
What did you think of the crime of the week?
I thought it was unnecessary. I would have been much more interested if they had, like, cut that out and just went with the whole new competitor thing.
Me too. I agree. Well, wait, wasn't in this episode, it was the choking of the girl with the doll, right?
Yeah.
It almost feels like it was a different episode.
Yeah.
Because it was like that all took place the first 10 or 15 minutes of the episode, and then everything else was about the competition, and yeah, they should have left it that the whole episode.
Do you think that the death of... Dilly's brother would have been enough? Do you think that would have sufficed as the crime of the week?
I do.
And the plot of Ned going to prison, obviously, and that sort of thing. Do you think that they should have focused more on that?
I do. I think that they did kind of intertwine those two plots a little bit, and I think that there was something to say, like some metaphors in there about what was going on with that crime of the week and everything, but at the same time, the episode felt really stuffed, and I think that it would have been better had that been cut out.
I agree. I felt like it was just put in there for the craziness that is the whole Pushing Daisies show, for us to be like, oh, yeah, I forgot we're watching Pushing Daisies, of course. The doll strangled the guy. But yeah. And then it went up to this whole, yeah, it almost feels like it was a different episode to me. So I think they could have done away with it altogether.
And by the way, I figured out Gabrielle's Ryan Gosling reference.
Okay.
Because
she put this in here and I was like,
yeah. Okay. Cool. Ryan Gosling was in a movie called Lars and the Real Girl, which is about a delusional young guy who strikes up an unconventional relationship with a doll he finds on the internet.
Okay. Makes sense now.
Yes.
Clearly, I should have gone to Google and put in Ryan Gosling creepy dolls. So that's
actually, I put
that
in.
That may have acted badly for me.
I put in Ryan Gosling doll, and I was like, what is this going to bring up? Just action figure. And then it like auto completed movie for me. So I just clicked that, and it was like the first link.
I was going to say, I know what to get you for your birthday now.
Oh,
Ryan Gosling doll.
Please don't.
He'll just like wake up on the day of your birthday and he'll be stood on your doorstep.
Oh gosh, if it was creepy life size, that would be
great.
Creepy life size Ryan Gosling doll for you.
No.
I'm so glad that that now has context, though, because I've just been looking at this doc going, I don't get it. And I wanted to dance around the whole Ryan Gosling thing because I was like, I'm going to bring it up in case anybody else doesn't get it either. But Thank you, Karen, for enlightening us.
Oh, yes.
Google.
Yes. Did you guys figure out that it was the health inspector? Or did you kind of feel that it might have been Dilly killing her brother?
I had no clue it was the health inspector at all. I didn't think it would be Dilly either. I did suspect her for a moment, but I think it would have been completely stupid if it was her. But I did not think it was the health inspector at all. So that was definitely a surprise.
Yeah, actually, that really shocked me. I had no idea that was where they were going to go. And I actually did think that it was going to be Dilly. And I was actually thinking, like, maybe they're not brothers and sister. And so I didn't really know what was going on, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. So it's probably one of the first, like, crime of the week ones that hasn't had the most obvious culprit.
Yeah.
I didn't get it the first time either, and I usually, because I watch a lot of procedural stuff and a lot of like bad guy of the week, monster of the week shows, and I tend to pick up on them pretty quickly, but this was the first episode where I didn't get it straight away. Like I remember like thinking, oh, who could it have been? Like going through like everyone that we'd seen in the episode, and I never came back to the health inspector for some reason, and I don't know why. But I thought it was kind of clever how it was the health inspector though.
Yeah, well, he seems so inconsequential at first because it seemed like he was just a product of what the two siblings were doing to Ned and everybody there. So I thought he was sort of just like a prop, basically. And then it turned out that he had a lot more of a backstory than we had initially thought. And I think that's why it caught me off guard.
Yeah,
exactly. I dismissed him almost immediately. I'm like, oh, okay. She hired him to get to cite them, and that was it. That was that. So it was. I usually end up figuring them out pretty quickly too, because I watch a lot of Law and Order.
Yeah.
And you know, I watch a lot of law shows, and it's kind of, you know, like the case of the week also, and I usually end up trying to figure it out too. But this one, I was stumped. I was.
Yay! I'm glad that it's good writing when you don't get it straight away, and when they manage to pull the wool over your eyes a bit, I think. Yeah. So I always feel a bit like, oh, I'm so mad at myself that I didn't get that, but I'm so glad that the show managed to like pull one over on me. Because sometimes I don't like being able to figure everything out. I like being kept in the dark about some things. So. Yeah. So obviously this leads into the season finale. How do you feel about obviously Ned confessing to killing Chuck's father?
Like I was shocked that it happened like that, and I was so mad that they ended the episode right there.
Me too. She was about to go into like this nice sleep, and then, oh, by the way, I killed your dad.
Although, I will say that I'm really glad he finally admitted it, because this is something that's really been bugging me for a long time, because I think she really needs to know.
I agree. And she honestly shouldn't, okay, she should get mad at him for withholding it from her, but she can't get mad at him for what happened, because it was his first kill.
Yes.
It was the very first time. He had no idea. And, I mean, he saved his mom, so I don't know. Hopefully he just explains it in a good way to where she can understand, instead of saying, yeah, well, it happened, and I'm sorry.
Do you feel like Ned's the kind of person that will be able to explain himself very, very clearly, though? Or do you think there'll be a lot of crossed wires in the next episode?
I think that there will be to some extent, but the two of them sort of get mad at each other, then something happens and they kind of realize what's important, and they realize that maybe they've taken things out of context, or they come to understand what the other person is feeling and why they're feeling that way. So I think that it's going to be really difficult at first, and I do think she's going to be really angry about it, but by the end of the episode, I really hope that she, like you were saying, Brandy, you took the words right out of my mouth this time, that she realizes that withholding the information was a bad thing to do, but the actual killing part of it was a complete accident. He had no idea what would happen when he did that. And she can be upset about it, but it's not like it was his fault. He didn't do it on purpose.
Cool. So we've got, that's just a couple of thoughts to wrap up for going into the season finale, but how about we lighten that back up again by going over our favorite scenes, which I know Karen and I picked exactly the same one, and Karen has clearly refused to choose another one.
I'm so sorry. You go first, and then I'll add in my favorite little bit of part.
Well, I absolutely loved everything to do with the scene with Olive and Chuck breaking into Bittersweets. I love them together. I love them working together. I love just that whole kind of all in black in the kick-ass heels, and just the whole the door with Olive like smashing the glass. I just think that whole scene is amazing for me.
Yes, I completely agree. And specifically, my favorite part of that was how they were both in heels. Totally not practical, let alone quiet, by the way. But they obviously didn't care about that. They just wanted to be super stylish. And they were just really cute. And I just love how they were totally being badasses. But at the same time, they were like, yeah, we're going to do this. And we're going to do it in heels. So it was really cool.
When I read in the doc what Karen wrote, the B&E in heels, I was rolling. Do you guys know the comedian Dane Cook?
Yes.
He has this this stand-up when he talks about he did a B&E at one time, and it is so hilarious. You all have to Google it. I'm telling you, Dane Cook B&E, because he talks about how he's going and he's about to do a B&E, so he kicks down the door. And then he gets in there, and then he realizes, I don't want to do a B&E, actually. I think I just wanted to kick a door down. And then he runs back out, and then he says, all I can imagine is that family's in the house saying, oh, my God, somebody broke in. And they've probably been looking for weeks to find out what the robber ended up taking. And he took absolutely nothing, and it just kills me every time. It's definitely worth listening to.
I think I've heard that one, actually. But since we're talking about Dane Cook, we have to talk about the Karen is a douchebag. Have you guys heard that one?
Yes.
It is my favorite, and it's just so good. The friend that nobody likes, and in his circle, it's Karen.
That is hilarious.
I feel like it's very appropriate.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got nothing to worry about in this circle, Karen.
No, not this Aww. Circle.
Thanks, guys.
Brandy, what was your favorite scene?
Yeah, mine was anything involving Molly Shannon, who was Dilly. Once I saw her come out of that back room of Bittersweet, I got very excited, because I just loved her on Saturday Night Live when she would always do the cheerleading sketch with, oh my gosh, what's his name? With another cast member on Saturday Night Live. So I thought she was actually going to be a bit funnier, but the first time we ended up seeing her when she was doing the whole stuttering thing, she was just awesome. And every time that she was on screen, I was just in awe, because she's amazing and she's funny. So anything with her.
Awesome. How about favorite lines? I know, obviously, going back to things that kind of toe the line between being funny and maybe offensive, I think Karen should say her one first, because this was one line that I wasn't, like, I'm still not sure about this line.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Because I thought it was absolutely hilarious, and it was probably the one line that I thought worked really well. But okay, yeah, my line was from Emerson, and it was when Ned was already in prison, and he was talking, Emerson was talking to Chuck, and he basically goes, "An attractive man who makes pies for a living shouldn't spend even a short amount of time in prison."
Like, I think it's funny, but then I think I spent a lot more time, like, online and realizing implications of, like stereotypical kind of depictions of people and what they should and shouldn't do. And I kind of was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this now. Because I'm like, hey, who's to say an attractive man who makes pies for a living can't, like, protect himself.
Yeah.
So who's to say he still can't kick some serious ass, even though he makes very good pies? But, yeah, I don't know. I still think it still gets a little bit of a chuckle out of me, but I think I'm more aware of implications of, like, stereotypes now that I'm a bit older. So I kind of, sometimes I think twice about some of the things that are supposed to be played off for laughs. And I maybe don't find it as funny as I might have a few years ago, I guess.
I see where you're coming from. I did find it hilarious, though. I just hope that it came from a part of Emerson where he knows Ned on a personal level.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know how, I don't know. It was
I've just realized that we've all picked Emerson quotes.
We did. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We've all got Emerson quotes. This is nice. Amazing. Brandy, do you want to do yours?
Sure. Mine is right before they're walking into the guy who had his doll of a girlfriend for a girlfriend's apartment. But he says, or Emerson says, "The truth ain't like puppies. A bunch of them running around. You pick your favorite. One truth. It's come a knocking." It was funny. Because Chuck just seems like this free spirit, and she tries to get the best out of people. And Emerson, he's straight to the point all the time. And I love that. I love it.
Don't take no crap.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And, of course, mine was an Emerson one as well, which was, well, that idea might make a stupid idea feel better about itself. Which is, in fact, a line that I have used once or twice in my own life. So, yeah, I can say that I have used this one. There aren't many quotes from shows that I will admit to having used in real life. But, yeah, that idea might make a stupid idea feel better about itself is one of them. Because it's so, so apt. For so many real life things. It's just, yeah. But yeah, I think that's that. Otherwise, we're just going to keep talking for forever.
Which is a possibility.
It's entirely a possibility. Because we don't have any listener feedback either. There's no listener feedback.
Aww.
So we don't have anything to kind of address. But right at the end, so we're kind of going to leave it on that Emerson awesomeness. Yeah.
It's fine with me.
Yeah, so I guess I'll reiterate the contact info again. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter at @RE_watchable. When this episode goes up, you can comment on the post on hyperball.com, or if you feel so inclined and you do actually download the podcast from iTunes, you can leave us a review and a rating in there. But I guess that's everything, so I guess I'll say bye guys.
Bye.
Bye.